Hello, everybody. This is Parashat Tetzaveh, and the Parashat begins with a commandment to light the menorah. And the Baal Turim, which really comes from a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, he says that the word Tetzaveh, you should command, is really the gematria. It's the same numerical value as saying Nashim Tetzaveh. Command the women, Ner Tamid, to light a constant fire, is the same gematria as the word B'Shabbos on Shabbos. And says the Tosfos over there in the Medrash that this is an open allusion to the mitzvah of women lighting the Shabbos candles on Shabbos. It's an allusion that it comes from the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Now the question though is, what is the connection? What is an allusion between the lighting of the Shabbos candles and the lighting of the Ner in the Beis HaMikdash? So I was thinking as follows, that the Chasam Sefer over here in the beginning of our parsha asks a very strong question. He says, you look at the sequence of the parshas. Parshas Truma discusses the building of the Mishkan and all the utensils that were needed in the Mishkan. Parshas Tetzaveh primarily discusses the way to make the big dekahuna, the different garments of the Kohen Gadol and all the Kehanim. And yet, for some reason, the Torah feels the need to stick in between those two parshas, this commandment to light the menorah. Which is strange, because there's all these other kelim in the Beis HaMikdash which were used as Shulchan and the Mizbeach HaKeteres, and yet the Torah doesn't tell the way to use them and all the Avodah is done with them till later. So why here, when we're detailing the construction of the Mishkan and the Begadim, did the Torah feel the need to put in the mitzvah of lighting the menorah? The Chasam Sefer explains, based on a Das Kanim from Tosfos, he says that you see that the lighting of the menorah wasn't just a way to use the menorah. It was part of making the Mishkan the Mishkan. You know, as we say it nowadays, you can have a building, you can have a shul, but if the lights aren't on, then it's not really functioning like a shul. A shul is a place where you come and you learn and you daven. And until the lights are on, there's nothing really going on there, and it's missing in its shame and its definition of being a mikdash. And that's what Torah is telling us, that until the menorah was lit, it wasn't really a Mishkan. It's part of the construction of the Mishkan, not just the usage. So I'm wondering if perhaps we can say the same thing goes on with the lighting of the Shabbos candle. You see, to have a Shabbos in a Jewish home, you don't really need candles. You can have the food, you can have people not working, you have Shabbos. The Shabbos candles, the halacha tells us, are there to make it special, to make it covered, to give honor to Shabbos, to make it enjoyable, a person can see, a person can enjoy his food better. It's to bring Shabbos to a higher level, to make it special. And the Torah is telling us that the women have the mitzvah to take Shabbos and to make it, to build it, to make it what it really is. Because even though it's not essential, but when it comes to Shabbos, that extra level of kavod and enjoyment makes Shabbos what it is. And the woman is given that job, that mitzvah, of bringing the Shabbos into the home in the highest level. The Navi in Yirmiyah compares Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, to a olive, Zayis Saranon Yifei Toyar. He compares Yeshiva to an olive. And the Medrash explains, what's this allusion, what's this metaphor of an olive? Says the Medrash, because an olive, we know, it has oil inside it, but the way to get it out, says the Medrash, is you take the olive, you crush it, you press it, and you force the oil out of it. Says the Medrash, so too the Jewish people, that once the non-Jews come and the gullus begins and all the suffering and all the pressures and all the kind of travails of Klal Yisrael that they went through, that's when their beauty comes out, that's when their goodness comes out, and that is why they're compared to an olive. And the Medrash Shmuel asks that seemingly, you know, it's not a very complimentary statement. The Navi's trying to say something nice about Klal Yisrael and say that they're like a beautiful olive, and the Medrash is saying that, you know, Klal Yisrael actually, until you beat them, they're really not that great. How do you reconcile? What does Medrash mean? Says the Shem Shmuel, the Medrash is trying to say a point, which is that we understand that an olive, when you crush it, when you press it, when you beat it, that's not what creates the oil. The oil was inside the olive the whole time. It was just blocked from getting out. And you need the process of crushing the olive to get rid of that blockage and to let the oil come out. And so too, the Medrash is telling us, Klal Yisrael, they always have goodness inside them. Everybody in Klal Yisrael has goodness inside them. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes external forces to remove the blockages and let that good potential come out. But the point that the Navi is saying is the goodness of Klal Yisrael, that everybody has deep inside them, all that goodness that they need, it's just a matter of getting it out. I just heard a mushal or a story from the Dibna Magid. The Dibna Magid said, imagine a guy comes to shul one morning and he davens shachris. It's beautiful. He davens shachris and Shemayim, and they're sitting there and they're like, wow, Yankel davens shachris. Let's give Yankel some reward. Let's give him a schar. So one malach says, let's give him $5,000 for davening shachris. The next malach says, let's give him $10,000. And everyone's getting all excited how much money they should give Yankel. And all of a sudden, the satan comes in. He's like, whoa, slow down. We're giving Yankel $10,000 for davening shachris. Yesterday, Yankel slept through shachris for nothing. He woke up. He wasn't in the mood. He was tired. He went and he ditched shachris. So you're going to give him $10,000 for missing shachris? And forget shachris. Yesterday by mincha, he didn't daven mincha either. You know why? Because he had something come up, something he couldn't take care of. He wanted to save a couple of bucks. So he went and he missed mincha. Yankel doesn't care about mincha. He doesn't care about shachris. It's not worth $10,000 to him. We're not giving him more than $5 for shachris. So how do we answer the satan, says the Dabramaket? How do the malachim get back to the satan? How do we get Yankel his $10,000? Says the Dabramaket, I'll tell you why. Because you see, you're right, Yankel sometimes tends to miss davening, tends to miss his learning, even for things that are really worth very little, even for small pitchavkis, as we say in Yiddish. But there's a difference, you see, because if he came to Yankel after he did daven shachris, on a good day when he made it to shachris, or he made it to mincha, and you go to Yankel and you say, Yankel, can I buy your shachris from you? I want to get that schar that you have in Elohim Haba. I want to buy it off you. I'll give you $10,000. Would he sell it? And the answer is that 99.9% of Yidden would never sell the Olam Haba on any mitzvah. Why? Because they understand deep down that it's worth way more than anything money could buy. Every Yid knows deep down that every bit of Ruchnius is priceless. So then why do we give it away for so little? Why do we throw away Ruchnius for such little things? Because what happens is that in the heat of the moment, the Yetzirah gets us, and we get distracted, and we forget the worth of the mitzvahs, and we get carried away with what we're doing. But deep down, inherently, every Yid knows what's really worth. And therefore, once he's done the mitzvah, once he's out of the struggle, he'll never sell it for no matter what. And that's something that are really the avoid of a person. Our job is to tap into what we know to be true inside and to not let ourselves get carried away by the blockages and by the distractions of the Yetzirah and let that pure Shemen Zayin Zach, that goodness, that oil that's deep inside all of us, to actually come out and shed its light. The Gemara in Baba Basra brings a pasuk in Yeshaya, where the Navi tells us that when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt in the third Beis HaMikdash, the pasuk says, "V'samti kadoikad shimshay shayich," I will place your windows to be from beautiful stones. And the Gemara explains which stones, which precious gems are going to be the windows of the Beis HaMikdash of the future. It says the Gemara, the stones of Shoyham and the stones of Yishpe. And the Meshech Chachma explains as follows. He says, what the Gemara is explaining is that in our parsha, the stones of Shoyam were used on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol, which were on the Ephod. And the Gemara tells us that the Ephod perfected, it was Mechaper, it atoned for the chait, for the sin of Avodah Zarah, for the sin of wrong beliefs, of wrong, of having wrong deis, wrong views and beliefs of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to this world, and sins in that area. And therefore, the stone of Shoyam represented when Klai Yisrael perfects itself in its emunah. The stone of Yishpe was the final stone on the Cheshen, which is really represents, as we know, Mishpat, judgment, which means the interpersonal laws, the laws of Ben Adam L'Chaver. And the Gemara is telling us that the way the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, the beautiful stones that are going to light up the Beis HaMikdash, is that when Klai Yisrael perfects itself in its emunah, in its belief and its relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in its Ben Adam L'Makon, and when Klai Yisrael perfects itself in its Ben Adam L'Chaveri, in its Mishpat, in honest dealings with each other, and that is going to be what brings us the light of the Beis HaMikdash and the final Geula. Just want to end off with one more point. This week's parasha was also a parasha Zachar, the Shabbos, and the different Mefarshim explain what exactly was the sin that allowed Amalek to come and attack Klai Yisrael. But the Medrash and the Rashis there seem to say very clearly that the sin was that they left Rafidim, that they left the Rifyain, the weakening, and Rashi says it was the weakening of their Amunah. They complained and they said, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu amayin. Klai Yisrael sat there and said, is Hashem really with us? And Rashi brings a famous Medrash. You have a father who was carrying his child on his shoulders, and the kid says, I want some fruit, and the father plucks him some fruit. The kid says, I want this, I want that, and his father keeps passing him stuff. And then all of a sudden, the kid says, hey, where's my father? And the father gets annoyed, And he says to him, where's my father? I'm holding you up the whole time. I'm bringing you everything. I'm giving you everything. And the father throws him down off his shoulders, and the kid gets bitten by a dog. And the father says, now you know where I am? Says the Chazal, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm sitting here, you're in a desert, I'm giving you everything you need. And then you go, where am I? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to remove myself for a little bit, and you'll see where I am when Amalek attacked us. And that's really, says the Medrash, really what a person is supposed to be working on. Amalek is a reminder to ourselves of the dangers of when we forget who's really taking care of us and who's running the show. But I saw in the Sefer Ruach HaYo, he brings around Malbim. The Malbim says, you see this point already in the war that Klal Yisrael fought with Amalek. It says during that war that Moshe Rabbeinu, he went up to the mountain. Yeshua actually led the troops to fight Amalek. But Moshe Rabbeinu was fighting the real war. He went up on top of the mountain and he sat on a rock, on a stone, and he had Aaron and Hur holding up his hands, davening to Hashem. And says the Malbim, what that means is, what the Torah is alluding to us is as follows. The rock represents unified group of Klal Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael is together as one. Why is that so essential, says the Malbim? Because you see, the only way to really instill Emunah in Klal Yisrael as a whole is if Klal Yisrael is unified. If Klal Yisrael is one, if Klal Yisrael is connected, then those who understand what things are really about, those who have the proper understanding, they could be mashpia. They could be able to give over that Emunah to others around them who are lacking in their Emunah. That's only possible when they're unified. And that's that one solid rock that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing on. It was the connection of Klal Yisrael to be one as a whole. How does that happen? How does that get created? With Aaron and Hur. We know that Hur was the one who stood up against Klal Yisrael when they tried to make the eagle, was ultimately killed. There's somebody who rebuked Klal Yisrael. He stood up for what's right. On one hand, in order to make Klal Yisrael get back together and on the right path, there needs to be the ability of Teichacha, of showing their mistakes and showing where we have to perfect ourselves. But it has to come together with Aaron, who was the Ayiv Shalom, or Ayiv Shalom, who loved peace and created peace, and showed that he did it really because he cared about the rest of Klal Yisrael. When you have those two forces in play, the ability to not be kind of deterred by the awkwardness of showing people what's actually right, but doing it together with the love of Aaron, then we can have a unified Klal Yisrael, and then the Emunah can go from one to another, and we can build the Emunah of Klal Yisrael, and then be Zeichar and Shem to see the Geula Shleima and the getting rid of Amalek. May he remain. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.